not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And then I'll drop down to verse 33, because Jesus kind of reiterates that. He's like, don't worry about what you'll eat or drink or wear. And he says, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And I was like, man, I was reading through that, and I'm like, Jesus isn't, he's not teaching us in a parable or anything. He's just straight out saying, hey, don't worry about these things. But I also, I thought it was great in there that he also says that, he's like, you know, I know, God knows that you need these things. And I thought about too in the Lord's Prayer, when Jesus is teaching us how to pray, one of the first lines is praying, give us this day our daily bread. Jesus knows what we need. God knows what we need, and he'll make a way for all those things. And it was, to me, it was very quickly him saying, don't sweat the small stuff. These are all the things of life. Food is good. Food is great. You need food to survive. We all need clothes to wear. I maybe like clothes a little bit too much. I love shopping at Goodwill and getting a good deal. Me and Brian were talking about that the other night. Never know what you'll find. It's amazing. Grew up thrifting. But all of these things, Jesus says, don't worry about this kind of stuff. He's like, the thing that you need to worry about first is seeking after God, seeking after his will. That's the big thing. That's the important thing. And if you've got that down, if you've got your relationship with God down, all of these other things are going to be covered. I was like, wow, I have a message that only took me about 3 minutes to preach. It's amazing. Just cut it off right there. Just kidding. What about a bit harder stuff? Because Jesus also knew that probably the number one thing that you are going to deal with in your life and have trouble with is other people. And there's a lot of small things, that we sweat when it comes to other people. And Jesus made this very clear to us. There's two passages. One is in Matthew and the other is in Luke, where Jesus tells us what the most important commandments are. And I'll start in Matthew, because Jesus sums up 613 laws. When normally we think about the Ten Commandments, those are the big important ones. But there were 603 other ones that were written after that that you can also read about in the Old Testament. And when asked what the greatest commandment was, Jesus summed all those 613 up into two. In Matthew 22, 34 and 40 says, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees. So the Sadducees were grilling Jesus. They were trying to trip him up, and he took care of that. The Pharisees come out, though. It says, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with a question. He probably twirled his mustache as he said it. He's like, teacher, what is the greatest commandment of the law? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All of the law of the prophets hang on these two commandments. And so Jesus shut the Pharisees down too. And he's like, you know what? All of the law can be summed up into two things. Love God and love other people. Because if you think about the Ten Commandments, and trust me, I'm not going to go through all the other 603 because I by no means have those memorized. But it's all things that if you love another person, if you love them as yourself, you're not going to do that to them. You're not going to steal from them. You're not going to be envious or covet. The Bible tells us that love is patience, love is kind, love is all of these things. And so Jesus also gave us a clear example of loving and serving other peoples when he repeated this commandment to his disciples in John 13, verses 34 and 35. Now this commandment came after Jesus had washed their feet. And I love that example because I think about the foot washing services that I'd been in as a kid. And we all made sure that our feet were really clean before we went to those because, you know, you didn't want to get the water dirty or gross another person out. This was not that. These guys were walking in sandals. They were walking on dirty streets. Jesus washed some very dirty feet that night. But after doing that, after showing himself as a servant, he says in verse 34, he says, a new commandment I give to you, love one another as I have loved you. so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. I was like, man, it's repetition. He's making sure that we know and understand that we should love other people. But even more is whenever I took a moment and thought about Jesus washed all of the disciples' feet, every one of them. In this same chapter, Jesus also lets it know that he knows one of his disciples is going to betray him and who it is. Jesus washed Judas's feet, knowing all of this. And I think to all the people in my life that I've had arguments with, that I may have held grudges against, and I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, if Jesus can wash the feet of the man who is going to betray him, the man who is going to lead him to the cross, are the issues that I have, are these small things that I'm thinking about, that I'm holding on to, are they really important? And it's how big are the issues that I have with other people? And I think for most of us, if we ask ourselves that question, things that we're holding on to, hurts, pains, grudges that other people have caused against us, it's probably not as big as we think. And even more, it's not worth your time and energy to worry about. And you may think that that's probably kind of a weird phrase. Jesus just told us we need to love people, and now Ryan is telling you this is too much time and energy you're wasting on this. But I looked into this a little bit more and found that it's scientifically easier and better to forgive people and to let go. An article that I read, it's from John Hopkins Medicine. I can give it to you after the service if you'd like to read it too. It summed it up like this. It says, whether it's a simple spat with your spouse or a long-held resentment towards a family member or friend, unresolved conflict can go deeper than you may realize. It may be affecting your physical health. The good news, studies have found that the act of forgiveness can reap huge rewards for your health, lowering your risk of heart attack, improving cholesterol levels and sleep, reducing pain, blood pressure, and levels of anxiety, depression, and stress. The research points to an increase in forgiveness health connection as you age. There's an enormous physical burden on being hurt and disappointed, says Karen Swartz, the director of the Mood Disorders Adult Consultation Clinic at John Hopkins Hospitals. Chronic anger puts you in a fight or flight mode, which results in numerous changes to heart rate, blood pressure, and immune response. Those changes increase your risk of depression, heart disease, diabetes, among other conditions. Forgiveness, however, calms stress levels, leading to improved health. So we have a clear-cut case where science and Jesus agree that forgiveness is so important, that it's your health is impacted here. Is a grudge you're holding on to worth a heart attack? Is holding on to a hurt or something that someone said to you, something that they may have thought was small, but maybe a small insult or a small slight on you, is that worth diabetes? I don't think so. But it's more than that, too. Like, as I read on in the article, it goes a little bit deeper, and it said that forgiveness, it needs to be deep. It can't be something that's surface level. It said that simply forgiving someone because you think you have no alternative or because you think your religion requires it, ours does, it can lead to some healing. But one study found that people whose forgiveness came in part from understanding that no one is perfect were able to resume a normal relationship with the other person, even if that person never apologized. Those who forgave, only forgave in an effort to salvage the relationship, wound up with a worse relationship. So forgiveness is more than just saying it's okay. It's more than just like letting go of bits and pieces of something that someone has done to us. It's letting it all go. And that's where these small things come in. Throughout our daily lives, we interact with so many different people. And I loved Grace's example earlier. I'm going to point to your testimony for a second because I firmly believe that your prayers and your example as a Christian made a difference in that guy's life. How we act around people, they notice that. It's these small things that we hold on to that can hold us back, that can cause hurt when Jesus says, hey, don't sweat those small things. And when I think about grudges, that was a good one that I started researching in the Bible because I was like, all right, I need a good Bible verse on grudges. I have a good one, but maybe there's a better one. I discovered that there's 100 Bible verses that deal with grudges. And I'm pretty sure the search engine I used just tapped out at 100, and there's probably more than that. So I ended up going with Romans 12, 17 through 21, because I felt like it gave a good blend of Jesus' words plus stuff from the Old Testament. And it says, "Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'It is mine to avenge. I will repay,' says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If your enemy is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will reap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." And I was like, man, we're back to being good to people again. We're back to letting go of grudges. We turn those things over to the Lord, turn those hurts. And I'll be honest, I can't really think of anyone in my life who was truly my enemy, or at least not that I thought. I don't have any arch nemesis as far as I know. I'm not that important. But there has been plenty of people who made my life more difficult, and plenty of people I just didn't like, didn't get along with. And the Bible tells me I gotta feed them if they're hungry. I gotta give them water. It probably says somewhere that I should give them clothes if they need clothes too. All these things to be nice to them. And then I also discovered the Bible tells me that I shouldn't be complaining. In Philippians 2 verse 14 says, "Do all things without grumbling or disputing." By doing these things, we start to overcome these small things. We start to overcome maybe pettiness that we have ourselves by starting to let these things go. How do we know if we're holding on to something? Maybe listen for the grumbling and the complaining. I know I do a lot of that. Janelle has to listen to me grumble, complain about work stuff all the time. This is a good lesson for me because there's so much at work that I just need to let go. I don't have power or control over those things. My boss has to make that decision. Let them worry about it. My real boss gets to make a lot more decisions for me than that. And turning things over to him is really what makes that difference. It's going to take a little bit of effort and energy to start with. And without a lot of time, there's not a lot of techniques that I can go into right now for letting those things go. But the first thing that we can try as Christians is to try to turn it over to the Lord. Let's try to pray those prayers. There's been people in my life and in Janelle's life that were really causing problems for us. And we were doing our best to be Christians and to be kind. And we reached a point where it's like, God, I need your help here. If I can't salvage this relationship, if I can't make this work at work, like, move me or move this person to another job. And we've had people move to other jobs because of that. And we were trying. So we were doing our part. And you may be asking yourself right now, I'm just like, Ryan, there's got to be some little things that are important too. What are some small things that are important? There are small things that are important. And I'll read one more passage of scripture tonight before turning it over to Janelle. And it's the parable of the lost coin. It's found in Luke 15, 8 through 10. And this is Jesus talking to the crowd. He says, "Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors and says, 'Rejoice in me, I have found my lost coin.' In the same way I tell you that there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." You know, for us, a single coin probably doesn't seem like all that much. Coins to us, our most valuable coins, if you can get a hold of one, is maybe a dollar coin. I don't think we have any coins more valuable than that. But for this lady, this was a tenth of what she had. She only had 10 coins, so this is a tenth of her whole wealth that she has to find. And God compares that to one of us. And I thought about us as humans. There are 7.888 billion humans on the earth today, at least by estimates. There's probably more than that. We are all flying through space right now at around 67,000 miles an hour. It's about 18 and a half miles a second. We're flying through on what, when compared to the cosmos, is a speck of dust. The cosmos, the universe, is enormous, and it just keeps going. Scientists aren't even sure if we can see the edge of our own universe. In comparison to everything around us, we are small. We, you know, there's a vast universe out there, and we're just here on Earth. But Jesus says that every single one of us, every one person that comes in, no matter how small, that's a big thing. And so how we act, how we present ourselves, letting go of the small things. A good phrase to remember is something we say at work a lot, which is death by 1,000 paper cuts. It's just small things all the time, just keeping you busy, not letting you do your job. But for us, don't let the paper cuts get in the way of your salvation. Paper cuts are small, but good grief do they hurt when you get one. And they hurt so bad, but they're so small, but they go away fast. And that's the way we need to live our lives. Paper cuts heal quickly. Be quick to forgive. Be quick to let go. Let go of the small things that are holding you back in your relationship. And the best way to handle our small stuff if you're struggling is to turn it over to God, because Jesus says that we should love our fellow man. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Janelle for her part, which will be so much better than mine.
Isn't he great? Thank you, Pastor Grant, for giving us the opportunity to speak. Don't take it lightly. And I wanted to continue on the thought, because there are two separate points where the Bible, when it comes to your outward man, the Bible is, don't sweat the small stuff. But when you look inward, the little things really do matter. So the second part of the sermon, and if you want to follow along in the notes section of the app, you can there as well. But it's, don't sweat the small stuff, but don't disregard the little things. And when I think about little things, I think about the everyday things that happen in our lives. And when I put that in a spiritual context, my mind automatically jumps to a comparison when it comes to, wow, the step-by-step or the day-by-day things, they're so little when you look at the miracles of the Old Testament, the pillar of fire, or David slaying Goliath with one little stone. Well, I guess that's a little thing too. Or Joshua asking God to stop the sun in the midst of a battle. The Bible is full of big gestures and miracles when it comes to God. Yet when he spoke directly, he actually made it very simple. And when we say simple, it's not rudimentary or even easy or insignificant. It just seems that in a pursuit of a lifelong relationship with God, these may seem really small, what we do in our day-to-day. So if there's one point that I wanted you to stick with you throughout this lesson, is that small doesn't equate to insignificant. And if we look in Matthew 13, 45 through 46, it says, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who he had found a pearl, who, when he found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. All of it. That would be one good pearl, right? And I don't wear pearls. I don't know much about them, but I do know that on average, they're pretty small. There's only a couple on record that are quite large. One, and if you want to go to the first slide, Alicia, is the Pearl of Allah. It has nothing to do with Islam. It just looks like a pearl with a, you can kind of see the man who's wearing a turban. And that's how they got the name. It's also known as the Pearl of Longzi, I think. And that pearl is 9.5 inches long and weighs 14 pounds. The largest pearl on record today is actually measures about 19 inches and weighs 75 pounds. So those would be big pearls. And to me, they actually, I don't know, I mean, it's not something I'd maybe want to display in my house. I don't think it's all that. Definitely wouldn't want to wear it on a ring. right? But if I put that up next to, say, a car or a house, 9.5 inches is pretty small, right? Now, if I were to offer you a car or a house with a pearl, which one would you choose? Anybody want to take a guess? The house? It's a good, if anybody offers you a free house, read the small print, but yes, take the free house. but I would take the pearl, because this hunk of pearl is worth $35 million, or the price of like 70 houses usually. But yes, take the pearl. So that's one pearl of significance. What about the next one? You got the next slide? Meet Pearl. Yeah, I know. at 3.59 inches tall and only as long as a dollar bill, she is one tiny creature with a big title, the world's smallest dog. So she is definitely not insignificant. But I thought those were fun. And so earlier I mentioned the miracles of God. Those were needed for a time during a time of sacrifice and those living under it. We are living in a time of grace and faith where our actions, no matter how little, have impact. And it's exactly why you shouldn't disregard them, is because little actions can build up to be big impacts on your life. If faith the size of a mustard seed can move mountains, what can one seed of doubt do? What can one seed of anger, what can one seed of fear do? It can grow and it can impact your life. So whatever you feed, whatever you're watering is going to grow from that seed. And that's why little things are not insignificant. To quote Andy Stanley, and anybody who knows me probably has heard me talk about him because he's one of my, I see Alicia nodding. She's like, yes, I am a fan. But he talks about little steps. And that's going to be the first part of what I would break this into two categories, which would be little steps and little words. But Andy Stanley says, every habit begins with a first time. Every pattern begins with a first line. And every journey begins with a first step. Sometimes you don't know where your steps are going to lead, or you don't know where the destination will be. But when you arrive, whether it's for good, whether it's for bad, whether it's for a better state in your life or a worse state in your life, I bet you'll remember the steps, each and every one that took you there. And there's a powerful quote from C.S. Lewis. It kind of gives me chills sometimes when I think about it. But he says, it does not matter how small the sins are, provided that their cumulative effect is to edge man away from the light and out into the nothing. The safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts. It's the small steps that'll lead you. Psalm 37:23 says, the Lord makes firm steps of the one who delights in him. In another version, I believe it's the NLT, reads, the steps of the righteous are ordered by God, and he delights in his way. I hope that my steps are ordered and that I am in his way, every single one. And that's going to be a new prayer that I have going forward after digging into some steps. While researching, I also came across this concept in Zechariah 4. And I don't know, maybe, and it's actually in our Enoch principle this week, which I thought was timely as well. But I'll admit the minor and the major prophets are probably my hardest part of the Bible to get through, so I might have glazed over this nugget before. But in Zechariah 4, he receives a vision of two lampstands connected to two olive trees. And this was a vision foretelling of a time, the time today, that we would be able to connect to God directly through the Holy Ghost. But again, this is a state of not grace. This is a state of sacrifice for the people. And the concept of being able to tap into God just through an action was probably inconceivable. One, because the temple was in ruins, and even if it was built, they had to bring their sacrifice that went to a priest, that went to a sacrifice, that went to an altar, and then went to God. So that's five steps in between. So those are big steps. But God sent this vision of telling the people he was pleased with their progress and the start of the new temple. And the angel said to Zechariah, do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. Your small steps are important, especially when they're moving you closer to God. So the second part, which I will say probably guides your steps, are your words. And there are so many phrases. I think Ryan and I both had a similar thought of, like, how many times was it mentioned? Just mentioning the tongue alone and how hard it is to control is mentioned about 125 to 135 times in the Bible, depending on which scholar you talk to. And there's so many about that come from your heart, right? Or how many that your tongue, or what these will do, right, if you speak empty words. So it's important to, it's very important to be careful about what we say. Not only is God watching, I'm sure others are too. For me, I have a little, does anybody remember Yakut Backs? No? Okay. That's a it's a 90s kid thing. Woohoo! Okay, dating myself. But basically, it would play it backwards. Where are my Home Alone fans? Finn's a little Yakut Back. He repeats everything. So I very much have to be careful about what I say. But again, I say one of the biggest things that are one of the largest verses to me is in Proverbs. And it says, the power of life and death are in the tongue, and they that love it shall eat of the fruit thereof. Whether those are good words, empty words, profane words, that's whatever you're growing and whatever you're feeding is what's going to come forth. I want to bring a pretty powerful example of someone whose words cost them dearly. Who has ever heard of a songwriter, little known one named John Lennon? Little? Okay, the Beatles? Okay, just raise your hands, guys, make you feel better. This was way, thank you. This was before my time. The Beatles today are still recognized as the most successful band of all time based off of their music sales, their records, and the results today. They've had 16 of the 100 most successful tracks or songs of all times, and also 7 of the 100 most successful. Paul McCartney is estimated to be $1.2 billion, and that's from him being a musician alone, just from his music. That's all he's ever done. Rihanna is a billionaire, but she mostly made it from investing, not from her music. Not good. If John Lennon had lived, most people consider him the creative genius behind the Beatles. Probably would have been the most successful artist of all time. But at the height of their popularity, when talking to the media, he made the comment that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus Christ. It's one small quip, one offhand remark, was enough to spur the actions of John Chapman, who eventually took John Lennon's life. And when he was during his trial, Chapman actually cited that comment as the catalyst. Most likely he'd already been planning it, but that's what set him over the edge. Your words have power. Your actions have power, no matter how small. I know that's a little heavy, but if you look at the verse again, it says the power of life and death are in the tongue. The power of life. So if our words can do damage, they also have the power to heal, to encourage, and to strengthen those around us. Matthew 12:36 says, but I tell you, everyone will have to give an account on the day of judgment for every word they have spoken. And Psalm 19:14 says, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. I don't want my words to be empty. I want them to be acceptable unto God. And I'm pretty sure everybody could raise their hand and can think of a time when a compliment made their day, or maybe a time in your childhood when your parents said something to you that was a critical time, a critical moment. I know I have those milestones. I have one time where I caught a teacher cheating and lying. And being a silly teenager, I called her out in front of everybody, which did not go over well. But I remember my mom showed up. She read that teacher the riot act. I wish she was here to hear it. Maybe she will if she listens to the podcast. But I won't repeat all the words and what she said. It was very Christian. I will give nothing bad. But I just remember what she said to this day. And I was 14 years old. And I still remember exactly what she said. And that shaped my life. And if I find my children have a similar situation, I hope that I can be as brave and let my words show them the love that she showed for me. So your words have power. They are small. They have meaning, so you can use them for good. Proverbs 4:20 says, my son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words, his words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are the life to those who find them and health to one's body. Just like Ryan said, right? Grudges can destroy, and your words can uplift. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Give careful thought to the paths for your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn right or left, but keep your foot from evil. You may remember a few weeks ago when Corey spoke, she brought even a little sparrow and talked about if his eyes are on the sparrow, his eyes are on you. She also brought in a lot of math, which I won't go into because it made my head spin. Maybe not yours, but it made mine. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the quadrillions, I think it was, and how small we are in comparison to the universe. But if we're that small, we're that speck that Ryan mentioned, God still sees it. So your little things matter. I am going to bring in a little math, not a lot, but I want to say, have you ever found those days where you've only been able to spend maybe 5 minutes with God, maybe seven? I know I do, because some days I have only been woken up a couple times, won't name names, Kellen, or maybe we will, of waking up and, you know, just being so tired that if it weren't for the Enoch principle, I probably wouldn't have the brain cells to actually, like, formulate some thoughts. And I know I've beaten myself up mentally because I haven't spent enough time in prayer. But just think about this. If you spent 7 minutes of prayer a day, just 7 minutes with God, that's 91 hours a year. If all of us are doing that, just 10 of us is 1,000. Right here, that's what? Almost, again, not good at math. or not on the fly, I should say. But that's thousands of hours that we have spent with our best friend. So don't discount the little stuff. I'm going to leave you with a couple of practical tips before we close. But one is the two-minute rule. We use this in our house a lot, especially when it comes to the dishes, because that's not my favorite thing. But if you spend 2 minutes, just dedicate 2 minutes to getting started, most likely you'll do more. It may be just putting on your shoes, taking those steps out your driveway and then coming back, and that's your exercise. That's still 20 more steps than you would have done. The other one is the 15-minute rule. Again, looking at the larger picture, your steps have impact. Your small steps have impact. If you just spent 15 minutes a day on an instrument, on your prayer life, on doing dishes, I don't know. If you spent 15 minutes a day, by the end of the year, you have spent countless hours working on that skill, and it's actually been shown that you are 95% more proficient in that skill than almost 8 billion people on the planet, or you are in the top 5% of people for that skill. So don't ever discount what you can do for God in a short amount of time. Don't discount the words that you say and the time that you spend, no matter how little. Because little words, little steps, little actions matter. In Matthew 5:23, and this is, I'm closing with this, it's the parable of the 5 talents. And I got to tell you, if this guy, this master, is handing out talents for them to say, hey, go invest, make me some money, he's probably doing okay, right? This is probably small to him. But when the first servant comes back, he says, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Because to God, the consistency is what matters. The faithfulness is what matters. And at the final, during the final day of judgment, Jesus also gave us an allegory in Matthew 25:40 that says, when the righteous and the good came to him and told him of what he did, he responds, I tell you the truth. When you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers or sisters, you were doing it to me. So whenever you feel that you need to take that step, do it. Because the little things matter to God. So if we'll all stand, I hope this has touched your heart in some way or brought you something that you can take into the next week. I would ask, Brother Brian, could you close us in prayer?